Good morning. I'm having a little, I don't know what's going on, but my phone isn't wanting to connect to my computer right now for whatever reason. But I just taught this elective, so I'll be able to, like, teach it again, right? I mean, it's just, you know, come on. Either way, what's going on with that? Anyway, this is a class on mercy, on Jesus dealing with outcasts and people that we would rather ignore. And hopefully what we'll see this week is that we are those people and Jesus loved us. And if that's true, how can we love other people when they're outcasts and when they're weak? And what I showed you yesterday, or what I wanted to show or tried to show yesterday, was that the woman at the well was in a position to receive mercy, and she did. And I guess the important thing that we need to pull away from that, if I could just choose one or two, is that in mercy, it's not getting what you deserve. It's treating someone not like they deserve, but treating them like they're the person they were always meant to be, all right? And that on top of that, that it has an effect on those who receive it. It changes them so that she goes away and she says, come and meet a man who told me everything I ever did. So it changed her, okay? It empowered her in her weakness. She didn't celebrate her past, but she also didn't hide from her past. Today, and we kind of talked about this yesterday, we're going to read from John chapter 5, and then, I'm not going to have it up there for you guys, so if you have your Bibles, this would be a good time to turn there. John chapter 5, and if you didn't bring a Bible, you can look on with someone else. That's the cheap option, or a slightly more expensive, but not much more expensive option would be to buy a Bible from Ken, because you can never have too many Bibles, but we're going to look at John chapter 5. I'm going to read from about verse 2 to about verse 17-ish. So this is John chapter 5, and this is Jesus showing mercy to someone whose their circumstances are a little bit different from the woman at the well. This happens very soon after his interaction with her, at least in the book. Probably not chronologically, but all right. Now, there is in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool. In Aramaic, it's called Bethesda, which has five roofed colonnades. In these lay a multitude of invalids, blind, lame, paralyzed. One man was there who had been there and who had been an invalid for 38 years. Then Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been there a long time, and he said to him, do you want to be healed? The sick man answered him, sir, I have no one to put me into the water when the water is stirred up, and while I am going, another steps down before me. Jesus said to him, get up, take up your bed and walk. And at once the man was healed, and he took up his bed and walked. Now, that day was the Sabbath. So the Jews said to the man who had been healed, it is the Sabbath, and it is not lawful for you to take up your bed. But he answered them, the man who healed me, that man said to me, take up your bed and walk. They asked him, who is the man who said to you, take up your bed and walk? Now the man who had been healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn, and there was a crowd in the place. Afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, see, you are well. Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you. And the man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who healed him. And this was why the Jews were persecuting Jesus, because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, my Father is working until now, and I am working. All men are like grass, and all their glory is like the flower of the fields. The grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of God is forever. Your emotions are going to change. What you think is cool is going to change. What you wear is most certainly going to change. All those things are going to change. This right here is not going to change. Let's pray and thank God for it. Dear God, help us this morning to receive mercy and to show mercy. In Christ's name, amen. Now, apparently at this place where they were, well, time out. Just rewind for a second. I want you to see something about this place. And it's that glorious things like mercy, they typically happen in inglorious places. And we talked a little bit about that yesterday, about it's Sychar in Samaria. It's like a place that people went way out of their way to avoid, and that's where God's mercy shows up. But I want to kind of hammer that point home for a couple of reasons this morning again. And I need you to understand this place where Jesus meets this man. It's called the Sheep Gate. And I don't know if you know a lot about first century Judaism and the temple, but if you were a sheep, that was one place you did not want to be, was at the temple, because they were cutting throats there. They were killing lambs, and they were killing a lot of them. Have you ever wondered, like, have you ever sat down at Chick-fil-A and thought, how many chickens is Chick-fil-A killing every day? Like, it's a lot, okay? And plus, like, they're not the only ones who sell chicken. Like, how many chickens are there? And, like, I don't know. It's just it really will break your mind if you think about it. Like, think about how many millions and maybe, I guess, even billions. I don't know. Like, there's got to be somewhere where they're, like, genetically creating chickens, because I don't feel like chickens can reproduce at the speed that is required for us to eat them at the rate we're going. I feel like one of those climate people, and I'm like, at this rate, there will be no chickens in 2025. Like, now that would get people motivated, okay? The ice caps no one cares about, but chickens, what? So there are a ton of sheep coming through here, okay? Like, they are sacrificing all day, every day. They're running that thing, like, wide open, and they're sheep. And so to have sheep to sacrifice, you got to bring the sheep in. You know, it's not like they're just, you know, growing the sheep there. Whatever. We'll talk about my understanding of livestock in just a second. But so this is the place where the sheep come in. And I want you to know that. I think it's important for us to know that. Because, okay, look, I am what some might say indoorsy. I am indoorsy. You know how they say some people are outdoorsy? Oh, she's real outdoorsy. Like, I'm indoorsy. I don't camp, because we have electricity now. I'm done with that. I don't rock climb, because someone invented stairs. Why would I rock climb? Some guy, like, free soloed El Capitan recently, and I was like, what a waste of time, man. Like, you could have just, you know, like, there's another way around. Like, we have helicopters now. What are you doing? I'm indoorsy. And I obviously, I haven't spent a ton. I wasn't raised on a farm. Like, you know, newsflash. You probably picked that up. But when I think about livestock, what I think about is the smell, okay? Because livestock, I don't know if you know this or not, but they're not really taking many baths or ever. Some of them, most of them have never bathed. They just don't bathe them. They're there. That's who they are. And this is a place, one of the things that helps us with our memory is our sense of smell. There's going to be some very distinct smells in this place, okay? It's going to smell like livestock. It's going to smell like their feces and their urine because, you know, again, probably not housebroken. They're killing these things pretty quickly. I don't think they take the time to teach them where to make or whatever. And so there's going to be those smells. It's also going to be kind of a loud place, okay? It's going to be kind of a loud place for a couple of reasons. One, because guess what? The sheep are not always quiet, all right? They're like, you know, bleating at each other, you know, and like bumping into each other. And you got the people driving them. And it also happens to be that this is a place, okay? This is a place where all these invalids are, okay? Where all these invalids are. It's a place, this is something that we are very accustomed to. This is a place where they took people who they didn't really want to deal with, and they deposited them there so they wouldn't have to see them so frequently. Right? And we do that all the time now. I mean, the human history, not unfortunately, this is the case, is that we take people that we don't want to deal with, and we try to kind of set them aside so they don't have to deal with them. And that is this. So this place has a smell and a sound. It's just a place that you wouldn't want to really hang out. What I mean is there are not probably a lot of people who are like, putting this on their Snapchat story. Now, I don't know exactly how Snapchat stories work, because I don't think the Christians should use Snapchat. I'm on the record with that. You know, and I know that a ton of you use it, and I don't know if you're going to take this as judgment, but I don't care. You shouldn't use it. So, and I don't even care if it hurts you socially. Like, you'll be fine. You might be able to run for office one day. Maybe. But this is not a place. I know how Instagram, they have, I'm not on Instagram right now, but I'm kind of an Instagram user. And I know that they have those circles now at the top, right? And I didn't know what that was because I'd never been on Snapchat. But you tap on that, and that's like your story, and you're like, it lasts for like 24 hours. And there's like the most annoying people in the world are those people, like you click on their little story, and there's like 60 little white bars like this big. It's like, what are you doing with your life? Quit putting things on your Instagram story. It's like evil dictators and those people. Like, that's like the order of bad. It might be actually the other way around. I'm not 100% sure. It depends. An evil dictator that is constantly updating their story, that's the worst person that's ever existed. So, but this is not a place where you put on a story. Let me tell you quick. I wasn't planning on sharing this, but I'm going to share. I shared it in the first hour, so I might as well share it here too. Is that we go on this mission trip to Reynosa, Mexico, just about every year, and work with Isaiah 55. It's a great thing. Love to go. But where this ministry takes place and what they do in this neighborhood is the worst neighborhood in a Mexican border town. So you can just kind of imagine. And what do I mean by the worst neighborhood? Well, here's what I mean. I mean that the neighborhood has two things on each side of it. On one side of it, they have this thing called the zone of tolerance, okay? And it's like a city block, but it's gated all the way around. There's only one way in and one way out. And inside that little area, everything is legal, okay? It's like the Purge, sort of. Like, they have, like, whorehouses. Brothels, is that the word I'm supposed to use? I don't know. I don't know what the correct terminology is or nomenclature, but they have a ton of those, okay? And you can do any kind of drugs that you want there, and no one's going to say anything. You don't kill anyone, all right? They're good. Like, it's called the zone of tolerance. Like, all right, so that's on one side of the neighborhood. This is a great place to raise kids, guys. And on the other side, and there are kids being raised in this neighborhood, on the other side of the neighborhood is the town dump. And it's not like the town dump wherever you are, because your town has a dump, by the way. You probably never go to it. It's probably out by where poor people live. But the town dump in this place is basically a 3-square-mile trash fire, okay? They have like 1 square mile of it burning at all times, all right? And we would take stuff out there, and when you look, it's the worst place I've ever been. Okay, it's the worst place I've ever been. And I know, look, I haven't been to a lot of places. I've never been to Syria or other, like, a war zone. So, but we go out there. First of all, we're making several trips out to the dump. We're trying to clean up this house to turn it into a place where people can stay, live, and not die from disease. We're trying to clean out this house, and we're constantly making runs to the dump, all right? And this is how bad it is. On one way out to the dump, we saw a dog that was laying, that was like sitting there. And then like the next trip, like maybe 45 minutes later, the dog was dead. Okay. So like I saw more flies in 10 minutes at this dump than everyone in here combined has ever seen in their life. That is actually selling it way short. Like, I've seen more flies than all of you because there are so many flies at this dump. And also there's a roving, part of it is on fire, so there's smoke, and there's a roving, they have, I don't know if they're wild pigs or if they're tame or whatever, but there are roving bands of huge pigs who are just eating the garbage, okay? And we're going out here, and when I'm going out there with a friend, with a student of mine, a couple of students, but one of the students of mine is a little bit like me and a little sarcastic, and we're just thinking, man, all right, we got to dump this trash out. We're like, we're covering up our noses with our shirts, you know, we got to dump this trash out. We got to go quickly, all right? And we get out there, and as soon as you open the door and you get out there, there's just flies everywhere. It's just like, you know, like all over you. And we're like, all right, let's do this, you know. And so we grab the trash, and we got this like 7th grade girl with us, which we didn't really want to bring with us, but she wanted to come out to the dump. And we were like, okay, you can help. It's a mission trip or whatever. And the very first thing that happens, look, some things are not for 7th grade girls. This was not one of them, okay? She needed to level up some before she came out here. And, like, she grabbed a trash bag, and she tried to sling it out of this cart that we're pulling or whatever. And the first one she grabs is metal. It gets snagged on the metal, and she yanks it. And just my student is on the other side of the, is downwind of that, and just all this nasty trash, and the trash just blows all over him. And I was so proud of him because he didn't murder her, all right? Because he should have and probably could have. And guess what? No one would have found her. We could have just buried her in the dump. No, like the pigs would have been like, score, you know, like they, you know, he didn't hurt her, or, you know, he just looked at me and was like, with the look that said, I told you we should not be bringing her here. I knew she would, and I was like, I don't know, man, whatever. I was just trying to keep my mouth closed at all times so that flies or nastiness. The whole time we were there, we were trying to leave, is what I'm trying to say. The whole time we're there, our whole goal is to not be there anymore. And this is this kind of place. No one is, like, hanging out here. We weren't out at the dump being like, let's hit up or whatever, you know, and show everybody. We just weren't doing it because we wanted to be out of there as fast as we could. And this is a place where people want to get out of there. They don't want to hang around all the invalids. They don't want to hang around at the sheep gate, all right, with the nasty sheep. And yet this is a place where God's mercy shows up. He shows up in a gross, nasty place. Now let's talk about these invalids for a second, and particularly this invalid that Jesus helps, all right? This guy has been an invalid for 38 years. It's a long time. I'm 37 years old, so if you're a student here, I could add your age to any other student in here, and you guys aren't 38 years old. I did the math. It's 19, so there's probably not two 19-year-olds here. But maybe there are. Someone's like, I'm 19. Well, I'm 19. Aha, I got you. Or, good job. Congrats on that. But the point is that's a long time. And this guy's handicapped in the first century. And what I'm about to say is going to sound kind of crazy because I'm going to make it seem like it's easy to be handicapped. It's not, okay? But what I'm saying is being handicapped right now in 2017 is a cakewalk compared to being handicapped in the first century, okay? Because just think about all the things that we do and rightly do to help handicapped people that we did not do in the first century. For instance, we did not have wheelchairs or ramps or guardrails for them to hold on to, or we didn't have special parking places for them. We didn't, you know, like, the truth of the matter is that this time, if you were born handicapped, you were lucky they didn't just kill you immediately, okay, for convenience sake. Not everyone did that, but a lot of people did. And if you were injured, like if you were born and you didn't have a handicap, but you were injured in some way, you lost a leg in a war, you know, or you lost an arm or I don't know, whatever. Like, you didn't have any other options in your life but to be a beggar. You're going to live the rest of your life. Your career is planned out for you. Beggar. You take that test. Sometimes they give you that career test in high school, be like, what career would suit you? They're like, oh, you don't have any legs? Well, beggar is all you can do. That's it. There's not another option for you. And, like, just to hammer that point home, I could not figure out something on my computer, and I took it to the Apple store. Okay. This is a very humbling experience to me for multiple reasons. One, because I just don't like to not know how to do stuff. But I go, and the guy who fixes my computer is blind, like completely blind. He can't even see. I could have ripped the screen off my computer, and he'd been just fine, okay? Like, he plugs something into my computer that talks to him, like that tells him stuff and where he is on the computer, and he has me tell him what's wrong with it. And this guy who cannot see at all right, I have the screen, and I can't figure out how to use his computer. And he doesn't even need the screen, and he's like, oh, well, you just do this, 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 and this. We've taken care of it. And I was like, that's amazing and awesome, okay? But that was not the case here. These guys couldn't do anything like that. All they could do is beg. And here's why it's really important for us to hammer this point home, is because we have to see that in this story, we are not Jesus. We're not Jesus in any of the stories. But we're not Jesus. We're the invalid, okay? We are the invalid. We're the one we're helpless, okay? And here's why. I know that the Sunday school answer is like, oh, yeah, I believe in total depravity, and I understand that we're helpless. I know, and a lot of you could just nail that, you know, and you give me some catechism, and that'd be good, and that's fine, okay? But here's the thing, is that you Here's why you have to really believe that, not just like know it in your head, but believe it, is because you cannot show mercy to anyone unless you have received mercy. You can't give what you don't have, okay? You can't give what you do not have. So you can't give what you haven't received, and you can't receive mercy until you have looked at the invalid and said, that is my spiritual condition. I'm completely helpless, all right? There's no room to look down your nose at anyone. There's no self-righteousness. You have to look at yourself. If you have not done that, then you have not received mercy, okay? And you can't. So the rest of this class is kind of pointless. We could just stop it right here for some of you and just say this. If you have not received God's mercy, then it's going to be really hard for you to be merciful to people because you don't have it, so you can't give it, okay? So the first thing that you need to do is find out, like, you need to ask yourself, have I received God's mercy? Is God treating me not as my sins deserve, but as the man or the woman that I was made to be, all right? Can't give what you don't have, okay? Very important to understand. This guy is helpless. We are the invalid. If you can't see yourself like that, then you probably have not received mercy. Then Jesus asks this guy a question. He says, do you want to be healed? Okay, this guy's been an invalid for four decades, okay? If this happened today, all right, this guy's been an invalid since 1979, okay? I was not born. I wasn't even conceived in 1979, okay? So, even if I count my womb time, you know what I mean? I can't get back to 1979. So, or maybe I could, but just barely. I don't know. I don't want to think about that. But whatever it is, although I bet the womb was kind of awesome. I can't really remember it, but, you know, like, just kind of hanging out there. But I'm cold-natured, so anything that's warm, I'm like, yeah, let's do it. This guy's been an invalid for four decades. And Jesus walks up to him and says, do you want to be healed? Now, that seems like kind of a stupid question, right? And some of you are like, you can't say that Jesus asked a stupid question. Well, I just did, so what's up? What are you going to do? Nothing. You're just going to sit there and laugh about it. No, is it a stupid question? Okay, it seems like one. It seems like one. Like, it seems like he would be like, look at him and be like, really? Really, do I want to walk? Like, that, it just seems like kind of a jerk move, kind of. But it's an important question because it tells us something about mercy. It gives us a kind of a window into mercy that we might not really realize, on the surface. And that's this, is that mercy brings about radical change. I can think of some more radical changes, but this is a pretty radical change. It's like, hey, you haven't walked in four decades. Let's walk now. Like, you've never been able to go where you want to go. You've had to ask someone to take you wherever you want to go. Now you can go wherever. That is a dramatic change in your life. You had no option but to beg, and now you can, like, work for yourself and do things for yourself. Like, that's a huge change, okay? It's a huge change in this guy's life, right? It's a radical change. And Jesus asked him, do you want to be healed? He's saying, look, things are going to be different for you now. And he's going to find that out very quickly. And here's why that's so important, why we have to understand about that mercy brings about a radical change, okay, is because people don't like radical change. It's very unpopular, okay? It's very, very unpopular, radical change is. Especially if in the current status quo you are doing well, you don't want things to change. I have a friend. I don't talk to him near as much anymore as I used to, but I do kind of holler at him anytime Mississippi State does something good because we both went to state together. He's a genius, and he lives in California and works for one of those tech companies. And I probably should get him to start supporting my ministry or something. But his name is, he was a groomsman in my wedding. I met him playing Ultimate Frisbee. He was not a Christian, and he started playing Ultimate with some guys from RUF, and he became a Christian. So play Ultimate. It'll turn you into a Christian, I guess. I've got one example that proves that. But he's from India. He's not from the United States. He's from India. His name is Dinesh Kumar Selvaraj. There are a lot of Indian students at Mississippi State because we're an engineering school, and I think a lot of people like to come over from there and do engineering here. Actually, also, like, the chief chemist for Saddam Hussein, who made his chemical weapons, like, got a degree from Mississippi State. So, Whoops. But look, we just educate them, okay? What they do with it, that's their thing. But Dinesh was a groomsman in my wedding. I was at his baptism. He was a groomsman in my wedding. Good friend, all right? He's got two kids. I have two kids. And on the rare occasion that state does well, we usually call each other and talk about it. But Dinesh is from India, and they have their – oh, by the way, I also brought Dinesh to Thanksgiving one year, to my family's Thanksgiving. And I come from a very, like, violent strain of redneck, my family. Like, I right now have family members, like, close proximity, aunts, uncles, cousins, who are either in jail or in a trailer park, like, or live in a trailer. Like, that's not, that is weird. I don't come from money is what I'm trying to say. Like, there are no country club memberships in my history anywhere. There are some hunting club memberships, maybe, or some violating and poaching, probably. Is that really where my people are? But to bring Dinesh home, and he spoke perfectly grammatic English, but he had a very heavy Indian accent, you know. And he would call me Kut and not Kurt, which is really kind of funny. And he would say, honestly, Kut, honestly. Like, that's how he pronounced honest. Is he would pronounce that hard H. It's hilarious. And but to hear him interact with my redneck relatives was also, like, high comedy. I brought him home, and he was like, like, they would be like, now, where are you from? What tribe are you in? And be like, no, Aunt Merle, no, no. Dinesh is very patient, you know. He would put up with that. But, you know, like, Aunt Merle and Aunt Bobby and Uncle Willie, you know, like, they don't get a lot of interaction with Indian people. So they're just trying to figure it out. But he kept saying, honestly, Kurt, this food is so good. And I was like, I know, man, I know. It's also really terrible for you. That's why it's good. Dinesh is from India, and there's a caste system there, and he kind of explained this to me. But in India, there's no upward mobility. You're born into a certain level of society, and, like, there's, like, the bottom, and it, you know, like, levels up like that. But you can't – you might be able to move one level up, but maybe, but probably not. It's very – so, like, where you are, like, if you're born in certain levels, like, there's only so much that you can do. It's kind of the opposite of America, or what we tell people in America is, like, you can be anything you want. That's not the truth, but that's a lie that people sell all the time. But that you can't be anything you want to be. Let me just crush your dreams right now. Like, that's not, you know, whatever. If we could be anything we wanted to be, I would be in the NBA. So, you know what I mean? So, okay, you can't. But in this caste system, there's no movement. And at the very bottom of it is the untouchables. That's what they're called. It sounds like a cool name, but it's not very cool. Like, if you touch them or deal with them at all, like, you have to, like, clean yourself and wash yourself. And, like you just don't even – they're the ones who handle the garbage and the refuse. And, like, they're the beggars. And you just – but India's trying to get rid of its caste system, okay? It's trying to get rid of its caste system. And so it decided to let untouchables run for office. Like, now, like, y'all are like, what, they couldn't run for office? No, they couldn't even run for office. They decided to let them. And the first time that one of them won, that someone from the untouchable class won, they became like a tax assessor or like a comptroller, kind of like, it's just something you run for. It's kind of dumb. But someone's like, my dad does that. And like, I'm sure he does fine, but whatever. You know, I don't know. All that to say is that this guy, he won and he served two terms, and everyone was like, yay, India, we're going away from our past and, like, doing all these things. The next guy that won that office was from a higher caste. He was not an untouchable. He's from a higher caste. When that guy decided not to run for re-election, this guy ran and he was elected. Before he went to his office, he sent workers in there, and he had every piece of furniture removed from the office and burned, okay? Then he had the walls of his office power washed or sandblasted, and he had them repainted. And he had the floors removed and put new flooring in, right? So, and he put all new furniture in because he was not going to touch anything that guy had touched the last few years. They were like, yay, we're past this. They were not past it. They were not. And a lot of us think that we're past stuff here. Like, oh, we're past this or we're past that, and we're really not past it, okay? And we really have to ask ourselves this. Do we want to see people healed? Because I think the Sunday school answer is, yeah, we want to show mercy. But here's what mercy does. Mercy takes people who are in a station of weakness, and it makes them stronger. And people who are already strong do not like that. They do not like that. And what that means is that we will be criticized, all right? We will be criticized for showing mercy. We'll be criticized. We will receive, and some of it will probably be friendly fire. Before we move into that criticism, I just want to show you one more thing. I got to say this before we move on. It's just a little aside before we talk about getting criticized for showing mercy. No, this guy was an invalid for 38 years, and I'm sure he thought, well, there's no way I'm ever going to walk again. And we would say, yeah, you're probably right. You're probably not going to. And yet Jesus walked into his life and just like, boom, like that. He just changed him, all right? And I just want to tell you something really quickly. Some of you come to these camps and you're like, oh, I'm just coming because the girl I like or the guy I like is here or because my friends are coming or I don't know. And I don't really get down with all this. Like, and these, you know, you might come from a different denomination and be like, these reformed people, what are they about? You know, these songs with these and thou, get over yourselves. You know, and sometimes we probably need to hear that and do get over ourselves. But like, all I have to say this is that there might be someone in here who thinks like, look, it's great that God is merciful, but he's not going to be merciful to me because I've done this, this, or this, or I've been this, or this, or this, this has happened to me. Whatever it is, you know, I've been abused, or I'm an abuser, or I, you know, am addicted to this, to drugs, to pornography, to whatever it is, or I, like, you know, I'm sleeping with my boyfriend or girlfriend, or I am stealing my parents' prescription drugs to use them and abuse them, or whatever. And I don't know what it is. There's millions of things you can get into, you know. You could just be like, my whole life is a lie, and all I do is lie and exaggerate to make people like me, and none of it is true. I don't know, but there's no way that God will ever love me, and I just want you to hear this from me to you, which is this, is that there's no bigger lie that you could believe in that, because this guy was sure that he would never walk again, and Jesus said, you're walking today, and he walked. And if you are sure that Jesus, there's nothing that Jesus can do for you, you're in the perfect place for Jesus to come in and totally change your life. And he does it all the time. John Newton is a great example. He wrote Amazing Grace. You might not know that, but what did John Newton do before he wrote Amazing Grace? He was a slave trader, all right? He did like one of the worst things you can possibly do. And God changed him. It changed him, all right? He took someone, I don't even have to look through history. Just look in the Bible. I mean, Paul was like, yeah, let's murder Stephen. And then all of a sudden, Paul is spreading the gospel. All right? There's no one that's so far gone that they can't be changed. If you feel like you are helpless and that you can't be helped, please see that Jesus loves to help helpless people. In fact, those are the very people he often helps, or almost always helps. Always helps. I don't know why I'm qualifying that. Let's talk about criticism for a second and why that mercy, that powerful mercy, brings about criticism. This is the part of this passage where we get really incredulous and judgmental. Because, look, I mean, it's pretty cool that he let this guy walk, okay? But then it says, now that day was the Sabbath. This is verse 9. So the Jews said to the man who had been healed, it is the Sabbath. It's not lawful for you to take up your bed, okay? And we're like, here we go with the Pharisees. Bom, 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 bom. Like, here they come to ruin everything. And, like, and that's true in a lot of ways. But, look, I go to Chick-fil-A on Ann Street in Montgomery all the time. Like, it is, like, kind of my place. And they know me before I walk in, okay? I know a lot of their names, and they know my names. And always, I don't know if you guys are like that, if there's some place you go all the time and you, like, see all the people and know them, like, that work there. What always trips me out, all right, and this shows you how, like, myopic my worldview is, but, like, if I'm somewhere else, like, if I go to the movies, I almost never go, but if I go to the movies and I see someone that works at Chick-fil-A or somewhere and they're not, like, working there, they're, like, just there seeing the movie, living their life like they should be or whatever, I'm like, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be, like, you know, like, as if they live at Chick-fil-A. Like, this is all they do. Like, just, like, robots who only serve, like, my pleasure, my pleasure, my pleasure. But the point is that, like, they don't have to work there very long for me to have seen them and know who they are, you know? And I almost know everybody, even the people in the back at the Chick-fil-A. Like, I go there way too often. I'm just trying to say that. It's a bit of confession for me to you. All that to say is, do you think there's a chance that after spending 38 years on the ground begging that one of these Pharisees might be like, who's allegedly spent a lot of time in the temple, that one of these Pharisees might have been like, hey, isn't you're not in the place you're supposed to be. And there's like, hey, you shouldn't be carrying that mat. It's the Sabbath. He even tries to help him out. And he's like, well, the man who healed me, he's like, hey, guys, look, you're used to seeing me down here. I'm up here now. Like, that's why you're confused. The man who healed me, look how I can walk. Legs. You know, like, the man who healed me, he told me to do it. And even then, they're like, who told you to do it? And this is like the very definition of missing the forest for the trees, okay? That phrase means that you focus in on the individual trees and you don't really see like the big picture. And these people have really missed the big picture. And we are just like them, okay? We are the invalid, all right, when it comes to our relationship with God. When it comes to our relationship with each other, we are just like the Pharisees, okay? And it's easy to rag on them and be like, look, these guys, they didn't get it. They're the dumb ones, you know, like whatever. Look. Every one of us has something that we're holding on to, and when it is threatened, a part of the status quo, and when mercy threatens it in some way, we are going to get defensive. And I'm not going to talk about what yours is today. I'm just going to talk about your parents for a second, all right? Because it's easier to pick on your parents, A, because most of them or almost all of them are not here, okay? So they can't, like, give me any feedback, and I really like to make fun of people who cannot say anything back. It's the best kind of people to make fun of. And then C, D or F or wherever we are in the outline, this is a very real thing that I've experienced in my ministry. Your parents have chosen to educate you in some way, okay? They chose to send you to public school, or they chose to send you to a private school, or they chose to send you to a private Christian school, or they chose to send you to a Christian classical school, or they didn't even send you to school. They're schooling you at home. You're homeschooled, okay? So, did I cover all the options? I can't even think, like, if there's any more options. Or they sent you to a boarding school. I don't know. You're at Hogwarts. Whatever. I would have killed it at Hogwarts, and I totally would have been a Slytherin, so whatever. We would have won a house cup. I would have made sure that happened. Me and Draco, let's go. Not really, guys. You can't root for the bad guys. Why are all the bad guys blonde-headed? It really bothers me. Anyway, your parents are super insecure about whatever decision they made about that. They're insecure about it, all right? And the way that I can prove that they're insecure about it is let me come to your church and preach one sermon where I just casually mention, like, how much I like kids that go to public school and watch all the private school parents be like, what, you know? Or let me casually say, I had a student and he was great as a Christian and he went to a classical Christian school and let all the public school parents be like, their hackles are raised. That's a phrase that people used to use back when we didn't have electricity. But like the hair on the back of their head is raised and they're ready to defend. They don't know that they made the right decision. All right. And every B that you bring back, you know, like every B on your report card makes them wonder if they did make the right decision. So no pressure or anything, but just kidding. I didn't make good grades, so whatever. The point is that they didn't make a good, they don't know if they made the right decision with you, but they're very defensive about the decision that they did make. All right. They decided, they were like, we're going to do this. Okay. And they're insecure about it. And because they're insecure about it, what they've done is they build up a little mound that they can stand on and look down at people that didn't make the same decision that they did. And they can probably list you all the reasons why their decision was the right decision. And they're very defensive about it, okay? All of them are. This is definitely the case in Montgomery where we have like 1,000 different options for schools, all right? We got all kinds of options. And everyone is super defensive about what they chose for their kids, all right? Because when we make an idol of something good, all right, when we take a good thing and make it an ultimate thing, when we make an idol, that idol cannot defend itself. It's weak. And so we have to defend it we have to defend the idol ourselves. And these guys, these Pharisees, their idol or what they have built around or what they're insecure about is the fact that they follow the rules. And this guy broke the rules and they don't like it, okay? And my question to you is this, is what is that for you? Because you have it, okay? What is it for you? What are you the most insecure about, or what are you the most defensive about, you know? Like, I know we got to get done on time. Like, there's so many examples of this. Let me choose a dumb one, an obvious one. Do you remember in 2013? It's been about 4 years ago. Do you remember that, like, Auburn football had, like, one of the luckiest seasons ever? Like, they had they beat Georgia on a ridiculous dumb play that, like, should not have happened. And they beat State. I was at the Auburn State game. They beat State on a play where the quarterback threw the pass and he got batted back to the quarterback, and the quarterback caught his own pass and ran it in for a touchdown. How many times do you see that happen, you know? And then there was the kick six or whatever. Like, they had like a – all right. I have a lot of Auburn fans. We're in Montgomery. We're 45 minutes away, all right? You know, like, one of my favorite troll jobs ever with Auburn fans that year? Because they were having a great year. There's nothing else to say about it. But I would be like, man, y'all are so lucky. And they would get so mad about that. They would get so mad. We were not lucky. We're so good. But I don't know. They would get so, and I'd be like, dude, y'all are lucky. Like, and because it's something that they're insecure about, and they have to defend it, all right? And it, like, all of you have that, okay? All of you have that. All of you have, and for the Pharisees, it's following rules. And this guy hasn't walked for 4 decades, all right? And they totally ignore that huge fact because they're so focused on marking and keeping their territory. Guys, mercy upends the status quo. It means that if you show mercy to people who need it, all right? If you show mercy to people who need it, you're going to receive criticism. You're going to receive friendly fire. Like, not just from the world. The world is going to criticize you, okay? But also Christians are going to criticize you. You know what friendly fire is? That's when two armies are fighting and they accidentally start shooting each other. Like, in the night or whatever, that happens a lot. There's no really such thing as friendly fire because a bullet is a bullet and it kills no matter what. But, like, you just ask someone in the military. But, like, that happens. And if we are going to show mercy, we have to be prepared for criticism. That we're going to receive criticism. This guy, Jesus makes this man walk. He hasn't walked in 40 years. And the very first things that happen is when people come around and be like, you didn't do that right. Why is he holding his mat on Sunday? Whoa. Okay, what did I want to get you? What are our takeaways for today? What are our takeaways? Here are our takeaways. I have four. One, mercy happens in inglorious places. It's not going to happen on your story, okay? It's not. You're not going to storify when you're doing mercy. The second thing is that mercy is for the helpless, all right? And unless you see yourself as helpless, you cannot show mercy. You have to receive it before you can give it. Thirdly, I want you to see that mercy is powerful and it can get anybody, that no one's beyond its scope. And fourthly, I want you to see that when mercy happens, when people are merciful to one another, it's going to open them up for criticism. We need to be prepared for that. If Jesus got criticized for healing a man who had been lame for 40 years, we're going to get criticized, or we're going to get made fun of, or we're going to get challenged when we start bringing people those kind of people around, or making sure that those kind of people, the people that we don't really like or are annoying or awkward, that they're involved in what we're doing. We're very prepared for that. All right. We got to go to lunch, so I'm going to ask, I'm trying to find a leader in here, but you guys all look so old, I can't really tell who the leaders are and who's not a leader. But this guy in the back with the Clemson hat, he looks like a leader. What's your name? David Sanders? I should definitely know you. You've been coming here for a while. My bad on that. David, go ahead and pray for us.